There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Now, many authors are in town for the Sharjah International Book Fair, and over the next hour, we'll be joined by not one, but two of them. And we've got one of them in the studio with us right now, the wonderful Katie Ford.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the studio. Now, for those of you listening, I'd just like to remind you a little bit about Katie Ford. So she is a prolific romance novelist. In each of her books explores a different profession or background, and her research has helped her bring these to life. Now, that's one of many things that I know Yvette and I want to talk to her about. So how long have you actually been here now? When did you arrive?
Arrived last Sunday. I'm afraid the days are running into each other, but I do seem to have been here quite a long time. And I wonder if I'll ever be able to cope back home, to be honest, without the sunshine and the cars that will take you anywhere at any time. I will miss all that a lot, I must say.
How many events have you done so far?
I've done two main events. I went to a school. Jane, my friend, and I went to a girls' school and had a most wonderful session with them. We were going to give them a talk on how to write a novel, we thought. Jane was going to ask me questions and I was going to give her answers. But they were so full of questions. It was just a joy to talk to them because they were so interested. And they were really good questions as well. They weren't sort of, what car do you have? They were sort of, how do you feel when you write a novel? You know, is it difficult for you to always get the inspiration? Just the sort of questions you'd get from any other audience, but sort of in a more fun way because they were these lovely girls.
How old were they?
They were 15.
Oh, brilliant.
And there were about 100 of them. And I sort of thought, oh, you know, this is rather a lot. And they were all quite, you know, but they sat, they listened, they participated. And it was just a joy. And their English was so good.
I think the schools here, it's unusual to have a writer go in. So I do think that there is, that it's not forced enthusiasm, it's genuine.
They did seem to treat us like film stars,
yes,
actually, or
I
pop
know.
Stars.
And
oh,
so
gosh,
they
it's
should.
Lovely. It was rather lovely, yes.
Well, someone else who's bursting with questions is this one here, because I think you've just read Katie's latest book.
I have indeed, yeah. And I will confess to being a Katie fan.
Well,
I have
lovely.
To say, and used to swap books with my mother-in-law avidly. So it's great to have the chance to meet you. You've been writing for a while, I think it's fair to say.
It is fair to say. I think my 25th book is coming out next year.
Oh, my goodness.
But I may have got it wrong because every now and again we have a recount, me and my publishers, and we count them all. And then we think, well, do we count the anthologies of short stories? Because I've done a couple of those. And some days we say, oh, well, definitely. And then sometimes we say, oh, no, we should just count the novels. So I think we're on about, I think I'm writing my 26th.
26-ish.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So what got you into writing in the first place?
I think I always wanted to be a writer in my heart, but I never thought I could be because in my family I've got one older sister and she was the clever one, she still is, and she was the writer. She was the one that wrote stories when she was a little girl, and I just had my head in the clouds being very confused by life because I was never listening. I was always somewhere else, and I'm still... Jane, my dear friend, said, and she's still like that, you know. I'm still always slightly thinking of something else because when you're a writer, you're always writing in your head or you're looking at things, you're making observations, and it is sort of something that's always with you. But I did want to be a writer, and then I became, I went to live in Wales with my husband, who was a sailor, so he was away half the time, and I had my first baby, and then he went to sea very soon afterwards, and then I had another baby, and I was living on my own mostly in Wales, and I had two babies, an Irish wolfhound dog, which are very big indeed, but she was such a lovely gentle soul. Then I had two cats who used to sleep on her because she was warm, and five hens. The five hens weren't much of a nuisance, I have to say, bless them, they just did their thing. But I was quite lonely, and I did have neighbours and friends who would come in and talk to me, but they weren't sort of best friends. You know, loved me. You know, I loved them. We were very supportive. But they weren't people I could tell everything to. And so I missed that. And I used to read. I was always been addicted to reading. And there was a library van that used to visit, but it wasn't very big. And half the books were in Welsh. So I had a very, very small selection. So I sort of pretty quickly read all of the English books because, you know, there weren't very many. My husband used to buy me Mills and Boon romance novels from the local town, second hand, and he would have to buy 14 before he went away to sea because he used to go away for a fortnight. And I was on one a day. And I knew it wasn't a real addiction because if I didn't have a stash, I felt anxious. And I think that does define it, really, doesn't it? But I loved these books and I used to have one in the car. I mean, I just couldn't stop reading them because they were really easy. I mean, I was very sleep deprived because, you know, I'd had a baby and then I had two babies and none of them slept. And I think because they were so easy to read, I could, it was sort of a place I could go when I needed a break, when I wanted a little reward. As a friend said, oh, when life's so hard, you just reward yourself for everything. You know, put the nappies in the washing machine, give yourself a reward. Well, it could have been chocolate or anything, but for me it was Mills and Boon novels and I'd have a little read. But I did used to get through one a day, which was, you know, quite a lot. And then when I became less sleep deprived, I began to judge them a bit more, and I certainly liked some more than others. And I realised some were better than others. And I began to be a little bit more critical. And now I'm going to say something that if I heard my children say, I'd be absolutely furious. I thought I could probably write one of the less good ones. But the idea of having an ambition to do something less than fantastic actually appalls me now. But at the time, I was very sleep deprived. And I thought I wouldn't be able to do anything very much. But I didn't actually do anything about it until we moved to Gloucestershire into the house where I still live. And I had my third baby. And when she was two, my mother, who wasn't one of these people that put up with you having vague dreams and ambitions, she really said, shut up or put up. And she gave me a writing kit for Christmas, which she invented herself. She bought a big stash of paper, pens, correcting. I don't know if anyone remembers Tippex.
Absolutely. Still
smell it now. It's a little piece of paper. You put it in. And I had a big typewriter. And she gave me all this dictionary and it was all wrapped up in a big bow with a sort of folder to keep it all in. And so I made a New Year's resolution. And I'm ashamed to say it's the only resolution I've ever kept. But it was to start a novel sometime that year. Because I didn't think I really had time to write because I had then three children. Desmond was away at school. I still had the Irish Wolfhound and the cats, although I'd left the hens in Wales. And I was very involved in local, you know, the toddler group and the play group and one thing and another. I was quite busy in my community. But when Desmond was home from the sea, he would take my daughter to toddler group and stay with her because she wouldn't stay on her own and all that. And I reckoned I could have an hour a day. And I used to find my hour and look forward to it and long for it. And once I first started writing, I knew the missing link to my happiness was this thing. Because I used to wander around. We live in a very beautiful part of the world. And I used to walk over the common with my big dog and I had my little babies and they were lovely. And I had a lovely house and a lovely husband and it was all very lovely. And I thought, well, why aren't I happy? You know, I've got everything. And when I started writing, I thought, right now I'm happy. Now I know this is what I was missing, that creative outlet. And so after the writing kit and I had to start writing, I started writing Mills and Moon novels. And I had a lot of encouragement from them because they are publishers who really want you to succeed because they want more writers. And particularly they did then. I'm not quite sure what it's like now because a lot of time has passed and things change. But they used to write me very encouraging letters. But I never quite made it. And then came the time when the encouraging letter said, this lacks sparkle. And I was so outraged and affronted. You couldn't have said anything more insulting to me than to say my book lacks sparkle. So I said, right, I'm giving up. I'm not writing Mills and Boon novels anymore. And then I didn't know what to do because by this time I had a word processor. My husband had bought me. It was Amstrad word processors. They are they're very old, but bless Alan Sugar because he gave us all that opportunity to have a word processor, which is almost as good as a computer. And I sort of couldn't quite give up writing because I had this word processor in my bedroom. And I sort of felt guilty every time I got up and went out of it. I looked at it and felt bad. So I thought I might try and write a historical one. a historical Mills and Boon because they said they were easier to get published. Well, I didn't really want to do the research because although I love history, and some historical writers, it's the research they love doing and they don't really want to write the book. And I just want to get on with the story. Anyway, I just started. I read an awful lot of Patrick O'Brien novels who wrote about the sea. And I had a plot and I had it all sorted and I just used his research. I thought, well, he's done the research. I don't need to do it as well. Because in those days, it would take you a fortnight to find out something. It wasn't like now you just Google. And I remember I started and I wrote the first page and it was fine. And then I realised I didn't know what they wrote with on the deck of a ship in the Napoleonic Wars. And I couldn't find out quickly. And I was just thinking, when I had a telephone call. And the telephone call was from the organiser of an organisation of which I'm president, the Romantic Novelists Association. And they had a new scheme for writers who are not published. You would write your novel, you would send it to them, and somebody would read it and tell you what was wrong with it. And and I'd done a few of these by this time because it was 8 years before I had a publisher, so I'd probably done about six. And the organiser of the scheme had obviously liked something about my writing and sent it without telling me to an agent. And then she rang me up to say, I've sent your work to an agent and she wants you to get in touch. And my whole world changed. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And part of me was really relieved I didn't have to write the historical novel. I thought, oh, well, at least I don't have to do that. But I did have to ring up this scary London agent, and I hadn't been in the world, I'd just been a wife and mother for so long. The idea of making a telephone call to someone who, had a proper job was a scary thing. Anyway, I did it. We made an appointment, and I said to her, well, what would you like me to bring with me when I come? And she said, well, I'd like a synopsis, about 25 pages. I thought, 25 pages? I'd been writing novels that were 200 pages. So that's a lot of... Anyway, I set my typewriter to triple spacing. The words were really far apart. And I got about 3 pages and I just thought, I'll have to busk it. I didn't really know. I had a vague idea, but I didn't really know what I was going to write about. And so I went up to London to see her. The day before, I pulled a muscle in my leg. So I had a limp. And I remember reading a novel that said if you weren't young, and by this time I was, late 30s, I was no longer. I mean, now I think, gosh, yeah, that's really young. But at the time, I thought, pushing it. In fact, I may have even been 40, but certainly around nearly 40. And I thought, oh, they won't want me because I've got a limp and I'm a bit old. But anyway, I got in and I managed not to limp very obviously. And we had a chat and she left me with the words, don't forget, we like jokes. Well, Mills and Boon hadn't terribly liked jokes and they certainly didn't like the heroine making jokes at the expense of the hero. And I was embarrassed to go and visit my smart London agent who had a very posh voice, I have to say. I mean, you might think my voice is a bit posh, but it's nothing on hers. And she was very scary because she was very efficient. And we didn't have very much money at the time, so all my clothes had come from charity shops. And I really didn't want to look as if all my clothes had come from charity shops. Anyway, she left me with the words, we like jokes, whereas Mills and Boon hadn't really much liked my jokes. And she said I would like 100 pages before the end of the year. And she wrote in her diary, make sure I'd sent her 100 pages by the end of the year. And this was the early spring or even sort of winter, March time, I think. Or I can't quite remember when it was, but I thought I can't write 100 pages, which is the equivalent of half a Mills and Boon novel, without knowing I'm going in the right direction. It's too much of a commitment. And so I started writing. And in a way, being able to have... She wanted the novel to be 150,000 words long, which actually it never was, but that's what I was aiming for. And a Mills and Boon novel is 50,000, so it was 3 times as long. So I had space for other characters. But it was a bit like coming out of a convent. Wonderful freedom, I can do anything I want, but scary freedom. I have nothing to guide me. I don't know where I am. And with the Milton Boone novels, I knew where I, you know, the first three chapters, you set it up. Chapter 8, it's all hell in a bucket. Chapter 10, happy ending. And I knew that structure very well because I'd written lots of them. But this was all new to me. However, I started and I wrote my first chapter and I sent it off. And I didn't hear back immediately, but that was fine because if you sent off for Milton Boone in those days, you might wait a year. You certainly wait 6 months because they had so many, hundreds. You know, their slush piles were immense and they did read them all and they did reply. So, you know, they, and I was used to that. I was quite happy. You know, I thought, all right, off with the first chapter, I'll carry on. And I actually, we went on holiday and it was a camping holiday. And we had a dog sitter and she said, oh, there's a letter for you. And she obviously knew it was from London. I said, OK, open it. And she read it out and I didn't quite understand it. And she read it again. And I think it basically said, jolly well done or something, but not in quite such simple terms. I can't, what, because that's obviously not difficult to understand. But it was just slightly confusing. And I was in a the holiday camp club, so it was like a pub full of people talking. And I had to push 20 pence pieces into the telephone. No one will remember doing that. But and I couldn't really hear, and it was all a bit... But I thought it was probably good news, and I really would have... Had it been my choice, I'd have gone home the next day. But we finished our holiday and went back and I opened the letter and I realised and read it myself and it was good news. And so I started sending my agent and she apologised for not getting back to me because she'd had a baby, which is a very good excuse for not. But, you know, because she felt it was bad because I'd had to wait a fortnight and I wasn't at all. I mean, I thought that was amazing. But I started sending it to her in chunks and I would slightly dread her ringing me up and telling me what the result was. And I, sometimes I'd think, how on earth, have, you know, surely my chunk hasn't reached London yet. How can you have read it? But the most embarrassing one is when I wrote a scene in it, which I hadn't been expecting. It, you know, that's what happened to the characters and that's what I'd written. And she rang me up and she said, well, and there was a very long pause. And then she said, linen sheets. And I thought, is there a thing? And I gathered eventually that she'd liked it and it was all right. And eventually I finished the book and she'd found a publisher for it just before I'd finished the book. And that was how I started.
That's really inspirational. I think inspirational for writers. We have a lot of writers, I'm sure, who are listening in to know that you stick with it, you persevere. You don't have to have a PhD in creative writing.
You don't have to be a special
You have
person.
To have the ideas, you have to have the creativity, and you have to have the passion and the desperation almost.
The passion, the desperation.
To want it to happen.
When I was finally published, I didn't feel hooray, hooray and excited. I just felt relieved because I sort of didn't have to keep slogging on. I mean, obviously you do keep slogging on, but I just felt, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I think the thing about being a writer is you don't have to be a special person. You don't have to have hundreds of O-levels. I've got 5 O-levels. One of them is in ballet. And I very rarely meet anyone who also has an O-level in ballet. And they've usually gone to school with me if they have.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
You didn't know there was a thing? Well, yes, and it was quite a hard one, I have to say.
I can imagine, actually.
It was
not
quite
for
difficult
everyone.
Because there was lots of practical and there was all sorts of things. But, you know, you don't have to be highly educated because at that time when I first started writing, everyone had gone to girls' school. They'd all written stories for their friends. I did go to girls' school, but it wasn't a boarding school. I didn't write stories for my friends. And then I didn't go to university and read English. I didn't go to university at all. And then I didn't work for the BBC or the Lady magazine.
So you thought you were a distinct disadvantage.
Well, I thought I'm just not qualified at all. But that is the joy of being a writer. You don't have to be qualified. And I'm also quite dyslexic, which is something else. It doesn't matter if you can't spell, particularly now with computers.
Yes.
It did matter a little bit more when I was doing it because people, you know, were a bit horrified. And I remember saying something about it to my agent. And she said, well, Katie, they're not taking your books on for your spelling. Probably just as well. Because they never would have reached the light of day.
I mean, I think for me, reading your books, it's a great, it's my comfort read. It's, I can sit down and, you know, the joy of yesterday was that I was able to actually just sit down, lie on the sofa and read A Country Escape.
Ooh.
on my Kindle, which was wonderful, and I enjoyed it. Now, that one is set in the country. We're on a farm. Your books, they all take different career paths, don't they?
They do, yes. They all have sort of different topics. I wanted to write A Country Escape because my daughter is a sort of a bit of a hobby farmer. She's not really a farmer, but she had some sheep. And there's this lovely man called Jonathan Crump who does make prize-winning cheese. And he was her sort of guru, and he would lend her a ram if her sheep needed to get pregnant. And he was really such a nice man. And he said to her, and she repeated it back, said, "I think your mum should write a book about farming." I thought, "Oh, that's quite interesting." And then there was a series of television programmes about actually Scottish farms. And there was this lovely couple, a little bit older, and they said, they had this lovely farm and it was all gorgeous. And then they said, "Well, we've got no one to leave it to because we didn't have children."
Oh.
And they invited some relations to see if they might want to take the farm on. And that gave me an idea.
Gosh, and here's me reading the book thinking, would anybody really do that? Yes, they would.
And I'm going to have to break everyone's heart.
No, Annabelle.
In the tradition of romance novels. And say that that's all that we have time for.
Well, I'm sorry I've gone on, so.
No, it
please
was absolutely
don't apologise.
Delightful.
It's been brilliant.
Thank you so much. For anybody who just tuned in and wondered who we were speaking to, the novelist Katie Ford is all the way here from Sharjah International Book Fair. And it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.